You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, taking you around the American League East for MLB.com Extras. The Yankees making a big trade, sending Aroldis Chapman for the Cubs, getting a nice package of prospects in return. So let's start there with WFAN broadcaster Sweeney Murdy. And obviously this is a Yankees team that's been playing good baseball lately, no doubt about that. They've won three straight series against good baseball teams, taking three of four from the O's. Then they took two of three from the Giants at the stadium, and then going to Houston and taking two of three, I think, was huge as well. Suddenly they find themselves four games out of the wild card, and I think a month ago you wouldn't have thought this was possible. And all this amongst the discussions of buyers or sellers, and this week they become the sellers as they send away Aroldis Chapman, but they get a nice package back. Now, the big thing with that trade, Sweeney, I feel like, is that, yes, they traded away their closer, but they have such an interesting bullpen that I don't think it necessarily hurts them that much. How do you see that trade as far as the rest of 2016?
Yeah, I think they just as far as the immediate impact on the big league roster, I think they look to strengthen an area of need, and they use an area of strength, which is, I mean, they have essentially three closers, but they were having trouble with those sixth and seventh inning outs, and they weren't going to make Gelen Betances work more. Goal is to try and work them a little bit less, actually. So they need to figure out how to cover the sixth and seventh innings, and really a big key was getting Adam Warren back. On the surface, trading Adam Warren for Aroldis Chapman doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but the Yankees have Betances and Andrew Miller to close out the back. They were struggling with those middle innings, and if Miller can get back to what he was doing so well the last couple of years in that role, that could be a boost for the Yankee team that, up until the last two turns of the rotation, has really struggled with getting guys to go deeper into ball games. So you add that element to the major league roster and then get a prospect like Gleyber Torres, who immediately jumps to at or near the top of Yankee prospect list. That's a real good deal for the Yankees. And that's when you talk about them being sellers or buyers or both, that's kind of what Brian Cashman means. I mean, they got rid of an asset like Chapman, but they helped both the major and minor league clubs at the same time. A good deal. They simply have to keep up what they're doing. You mentioned how well they're playing. It's really the first prolonged stretch they've had all year, and it's still only gotten them to within a handful of games of a playoff spot.
Yeah, and there's still teams to hop over, obviously, to get to that wild card spot. And that's almost as important as how many games back you are as how many teams you need to leapfrog to get there. Adam Warren had to have been thrilled, to be honest, with this deal. I mean, he was great with the Yankees in the past, but he was having such a rough season with the Cubs. To be able to hit that reset button and go back to a place that was comfortable for him, I'm sure he had to be thrilled as well. We mentioned the starting pitching. And it had been an issue all year. Let's be honest, that's been the biggest thing that's faced this team. But since June 29th, they're second best in the AL as far as overall staff ERA. Michael Pineda, back-to-back starts. He's 2-0. He's given up just an earned run in 13 innings, and he struck out 16 in that time. Talk about Pineda. What you've seen from him, Sweeney? What's been different about Michael Pineda?
Yeah, Pineda has just shown so much talent and promise over the years. You just kind of waited for him to put it all together. And I think you started to see that beginning of last year. And after the first month and a half of last season, things kind of slipped away again. It's the one thing that you really haven't seen from Pineda is one really good long stretch, a good full season, whether it's injuries in the past or more recently, just inconsistency. The other night against the Astros was interesting because he was getting hit pretty hard early on in that ball game. Forget about the fact that he gave up a home run the first pitch. Every ball that the Astros hit after that was very loud, and he had only one run against him, so it didn't cost him yet. But the game could have gotten away very easily from him at that point. But he settled into a good groove with catcher Austin Romine, who recognized how early the Astros were swinging and tried to take advantage of that with pitch selection. And then really got into Pineda's head, I think, a little bit because he got hit by a comebacker. And and it was hard. It came off the bat over 100 miles an hour, and smacked him right in the in the upper shoulder area, which can't be easy for any pitcher. He wanted to stay in the game. He wanted to compete, and he did, and he was actually really good after that. Again, executing that plan of trying to take advantage of an aggressive Astros team. I think it's just a focus. I mean, a lot of what has plagued Pineda earlier in the year was his ability to get guys out with two strikes or two outs. He was really turning hitters into all-stars with two strikes when he should be turning them into strikeouts or just plain out. So I feel like it's a focus thing that may come and go. It was really good to see him concentrate and get that game nailed down against the Astros in the first game of that series, because it was one the team needed for sure.
And the last game of that series, Sweeney, is obviously the game that the Yankees lost to the Astros, and Tanaka not at his best early in that game. But we see Luis Severino return to this team, coming out of the bullpen late in that game. It obviously been a while. All the struggles early in the season where a lot was thrown on him to kind of be one of the big guys in that rotation, and it didn't work out early on. Went down to AAA, now back up out of the bullpen. He throws two scoreless innings. He gets three strikeouts. Obviously, it's just two innings. We can't take too much from that. The control wasn't tremendous, and that's one of the issues with him. But is there hope that Severino can continue to contribute to this staff the rest of 2016, even if he doesn't get back into that rotation?
I think that's always been the hope. I think we'll see based on need at the, I think there's still an idea that the Yankees will get some offers for some of their starting pitchers and see where that goes here before the trade deadline. And maybe Severino ends up back in the rotation that way. Who knows? But, I think the hope always was that he was going to be able to correct a few things. He made 10 starts at AAA, and the numbers looked good, but there were still some things that he hadn't quite mastered as far as fastball command and his off-speed pitches that were, that really what was causing me to hit so hard earlier in the year. So I think the Yankees still believe he's got some work to do, but he is, he was being put in a role where it wasn't trying to get guys out two and three times through a batting order. The two-inning stint of the night, if he's able to still do that a couple of more times, I mentioned, at the start, how much trouble the Yankees have had getting that kind of relief leading into their big back end of the bullpen. So I think it's possible in the short term that he could really help in that regard, because he can kind of let it fly. And, Girardi mentioned when he came back up, that the issues that had been plaguing him, control, you mentioned, fastball command, the command isn't necessarily as big an issue if he's able to crank up an extra 3 or 4 miles an hour coming out of the pen and letting it fly for two innings. So it sounds funny to say that, because the last thing you want to do in late innings is start walking people. But I think they feel his stuff will play up, and that he has the ability to help him in that role in a short time. I think overall they eventually do see him joining this rotation again, being a big piece of it down the road.
Bill, the Rays may be out of the race as far as the postseason goes, and it's obviously been a disappointing season, but they are in the news certainly and will continue to be from now up until the trade deadline, because they're a team that has a lot of pieces that a lot of different teams out there want, and namely starting pitching, because there's a lack of starting pitching on the market, but there's plenty of it when it comes to the Rays. So it's a great chance for them to kind of be careful and maybe get something back for some of these arms. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But right now the Rays in Los Angeles, obviously opening up a series with the Dodgers, and the Dodgers suddenly really desperate for some starting pitching help, because Clayton Kershaw, obviously to the disabled list, could be out for a long, long time. So how important does that make this series as far as the Rays starters go in a sense auditioning for maybe a Dodgers team?
Well, we were teasing with Chris Archer the other day, because at the end of last week, the big rumor was 70% he was going to the Dodgers. So heading into this game, it's kind of interesting. We were teasing with him, which team would he be pitching for, the Rays or the Dodgers? So, but he said it that has not bothered him too much. He just still focuses on what's at hand. And, of course, he's been traded twice before. So He's a little more familiar with the process, even though he wasn't traded when he was at the major league level. But he seems to be trending up. And again, as I've written several times, you know, the three guys that seem to be opposing teams seem to be most interested in are Archer, Matt Moore, and Jake Odorizzi. And of that group, in talking with scouts from other teams, they say Archer's still the main guy just based on stuff alone, even though he might not be the most consistent of the three this year.
It's interesting. You'd think the Dodgers would have tried to maybe, if they really are in on Archer, want to get it done before he pitches against him. We saw last night Jeremy Hellickson threw six scoreless innings against the Marlins, and they're one of the teams that you would think are probably interested in Hellickson. You got to pull the deal before the guy beats you. But you mentioned Archer, and I think that the Rays have to be a little careful, right? Because here's a guy that before this season was a guy that people thought was one of the best pitchers, best young pitchers in the game, was going to become an ace-type pitcher. He's been disappointing this season, but you can't then make it a scenario where you're selling low. You still have to get what you think would have been the best possible deal for this guy maybe heading into the season.
Well, it's kind of, I think the Rays are kind of like the guy who's selling his house and doesn't have to.
Yeah.
You know, they've got Archer signed a really great deal. Somebody wants to come knock their socks off, you know, let's go at it and look, and you know, we'll look at it. But otherwise, you know, really, we don't have to force the issue and trade him. You know, it's not like we've got to get rid of him. It's not like one of these situations we've seen in the past, like David Price or even Ben Zobrist, where their, you know, their contracts were about up, and you wanted to get something before, you know, they went elsewhere, because the Rays, you know, typically don't sign big free agent deals. But, you know, come to us. We like what you bring, and maybe we'll do something.
Yeah, and the Dodgers have a lot of intriguing parts down in that minor league system, so that would certainly be a good a trade partner for sure. Another team that would be neat is the Rangers. They have a lot of talent as well. But that's the case with all these Rays arms, is that they're in that same scenario. There's nobody they have to trade. It's just a chance to maybe get better in the long run. That being said, the rumors are obviously swirling, Bill. So, well, you're in the clubhouse every day. How is this roster from 1 to 25 just kind of dealing with all the rumors? Because I know it's something that comes up every year, but maybe it's a little different when your team is in the selling market as opposed to the buying market.
They seem to have a pretty good disposition, you know, and they have some gallows humor about it. So it doesn't seem to be affecting them, really. You know, of course, they're continuing. You know, they're still not winning. And, you know, that leaves a lot of people scratching their heads, really, what went wrong this year. And, you know, I think it still goes back to the first half and the starting pitching, you know, because I think they built on thinking – I think they built this club thinking that was the constant they had, and it really hadn't been there until lately.
Gregor, big news of the day. The Blue Jays go out and add a big piece heading into the trade deadline. Melvin Upton Jr., they add him into the outfield mix. I know we anticipated the Blue Jays going after pitching, and I'm sure that's still on the docket between now and the August 1st trade deadline. But you have an outfield with some question marks, I guess, from a health standpoint. Was that the biggest thing behind this? Jose Bautista, obviously, just coming back off the DL. Saunders has battled some things. In a way, Pilar is always a risk because of the way he plays the game. Did they feel like they had to add some insurance into this lineup heading into the stretch?
I think so, and especially when you consider the cost that it took to get Upton Jr. You know, Upton Jr., that name's been floated around for the last couple of weeks, and you know, I had a hard time making sense of it at first, but then when you see what the trade actually was, you give up a low-level pitching prospect. You're only on the hook for $5 million of Upton's salary over the next year and a half. It really is kind of a win-win. There's a no-lose situation here for the Blue Jays because they're not really committing much in terms of prospect capital or dollars. So I don't really know how you would say no. And what Upton does is what you touched on. It gives the Blue Jays a lot more depth and versatility on the 25-man roster. There are some question marks a little bit about Jose Bautista and his injured left foot. So adding another guy like Upton who can spell Bautista occasionally in right field, someone you can use against left-handed pitching throughout the course of this season, it just gives the Blue Jays so much more depth and versatility than they had before. And, you know, based on the cost, it's kind of a no-brainer to pull the trigger on that deal.
I was kind of shocked by the cost a little bit. Hansel Rodriguez, the one player that goes the other way, that seemed to fit as far as Upton goes, who is having a nice season out in San Diego. But I was surprised by the amount of money that the Padres were still going to have to pay Upton Jr. in this deal. And that, to me, was the makes it almost a no-brainer for the Blue Jays. And how much does this help them, not just right now, but you look at next year and the amount of free agents. And we talked about it last week with them signing up Smoke and getting rid of one of those free agents that they would have to deal with. Now you at least have Upton Jr. that if you lose Bautista, you have the guy to fit in there.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit more certainty going forward, and it comes at a price that doesn't stop you from doing something else. I mean, this would be a perfectly fine situation in terms of his contract if he came back next year and somehow was still in a reserve role. The salary that he's going to be making from a Toronto perspective, that's fine because you can still get a lot of value out of that as a platoon type, as a part-time type player. It doesn't lock the Blue Jays in anything, kind of similar to the way the Justin Smoke signing was. It won't prohibit the Blue Jays from bringing back Michael Saunders or Jose Bautista next year. But it does give them a little bit more certainty for a team that has 9 free agents at the end of this year. There's going to be an awful lot of work to do this offseason. So it's kind of a nice little bonus for this team that at the very least they can lock in a bench piece that gives them another look this offseason when they have a lot more moves to make.
Yeah, and I'm kind of excited to see Upton Jr. at Rogers Center and what that could do for maybe his power numbers as well. I think he could be certainly a nice fit. He can still run the outfield well. He can play, I guess, all 3 outfield positions. I know he hasn't really played much right, but he could certainly do it, and he's a center fielder. So a nice piece for the Blue Jays, but they can't be done, right? There's still got to be some pitching out there to be added, whether it be a starter or a reliever.
Yeah, and that's kind of another bonus of this deal is that they didn't really have to give up much in terms of prospect capital or financial flexibility to get the deal done. So it's not going to stop them from making another move here over the next 6 days. Anything that they were going to be able to do before, they're still going to be able to do now. And there's no question about it. The focus right now is 100% on pitching, especially now that they've got some of the offensive depth issues taken care of. And you know, it's still the big wild card in all of this is obviously Aaron Sanchez, and Ross Atkins talked about that again today. His future role is really going to depend on how much the Blue Jays need to go after a starter versus a reliever. But I think they're looking at both of those areas right now, and I think this team's still going to make at least one more move, possibly even two, before the trade deadline to really shore up that pitching staff, because that's the one area right now when you look at this team that's very, very good on paper. The one area of concern would be the back end of that rotation in case anyone gets hurt or if Sanchez moves, and then the bullpen, which has been the biggest issue for this team for most of the season.
Does Ross Atkins get to go anywhere these days without having to talk about Aaron Sanchez?
No, and John Gibbons the same way. You know, he finished last night's game basically saying that he was done talking about it. And until the move happens, he doesn't have anything to say, and if it doesn't happen, then they'll just continue going on. It's by far the biggest dominant storyline around Toronto, and it's also become one of the bigger storylines around all of Major League Baseball, and that just goes to show you how well Aaron Sanchez has pitched this entire season. And if they do end up moving him from the rotation, that's going to be a big hole to fill. I guess the one positive you could take from it is that it would give the Blue Jays that extra setup man that they've really been looking for as well.
Yeah, and that setup man, it was supposed to be Drew Storen, and it just didn't work out, Gregor. Drew Storen designated for assignment this week. Here's a guy that a year ago, right about now, or right until Papelbon went to Washington, I guess, was a guy that was a dominant type reliever. He could blow up at times, obviously, in the ninth inning. He had some bad moments, but overall, he was a guy that could pitch the late innings. Papelbon goes to the Nationals. He gets bumped out of that role. I don't know if that did to his psyche, but then he ends up with the Blue Jays, and it just hasn't worked out. What do you think went wrong with Drew Storen, a guy who's still just 28 years old?
Yeah, well, and this is an example of, a trade that can look great on paper. You can make it for all the right reasons. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work out. I personally loved the Storen trade at the time. I thought it was a really nice move for that bullpen, and I thought he would settle into a nice setup role, and it just didn't happen. I think part of it is the fact that there was a little bit of a drop in his velocity, and I think throughout the season he was constantly trying to overcompensate from that, and he was overthrowing his fastball. That led to a lot of command issues. He hit a lot of batters, but even more concerning than that was that everything was up in the zone. And, John Gibbons just couldn't find a way to use him. He gave him multiple chances early in the year to try and be that setup man. They tried to ease him back into, a middle relief role and then gave him another shot in a setup role. And it seemed like every time that they needed a high leverage inning from him, something went wrong for Storen. And he just didn't really have a fit on this team anymore. So it's not a surprising move to me that they would just cut their losses and designate him for assignment. I don't really think there is much alternative because when you're one of the final guys in the bullpen, you kind of need to be able to provide a little bit of versatility and have the ability to throw multiple innings and things like that. And that's not Drew Storen's role. Drew Storen was supposed to be a seventh or eighth inning guy, and unfortunately for the Blue Jays, he just wasn't able to get the job done, and they've had to turn the page.
Brittany, the Orioles playing well again, minus Tuesday night, a loss to the Rockies. But overall, they've won 5 of 6 and kind of safely put themselves back atop the American League East after the Red Sox had briefly caught them. When you look at Tuesday night's game, Chris Tillman was trying to become the first pitcher in the bigs to 15 wins this season. He comes up short, and the team loses, but it wasn't a game that didn't have positives because Tyler Wilson throws 4 perfect innings in relief of Tillman. He pitches the last 4 innings of the game. What kind of a lift could Tyler Wilson give this team if he can continue to do that sort of thing?
Yeah, he was huge, and it's interesting. I asked Buck about this last night. They sent him down to get him more crisp, and that was his first outing for them since July 2nd, and he looked fantastic. Really working the ball in and out. As you mentioned, 4 perfect innings, ended on a strikeout, very efficient with his pitches. He just looks like a guy who's really rejuvenated by the rest, and that's kind of what he said post-game as well. So he could definitely be the guy because they took Dylan Bundy and Vance Worley out of the bullpen into the rotation because the rotation has struggled. Now they need long relievers. Tyler Wilson could end up being a very good option for them down the road.
Yeah, what is his best role to be? I mean, is he a guy that'll pitch an inning, or is it more of this scenario where he's the guy that could go long?
I don't know if anyone knows that yet. He's such a young guy, still in his rookie eligibility. I think for now, they're going to continue to use him in that long relief role. Gabaldo Jimenez is getting that spot start on Thursday, so it looks like they prefer to have a guy like him down there. But I don't know long-term whether or not he's thought of more as starter or a bullpen guy just yet.
So he could be a lift to the bullpen. Another obvious lift to this bullpen is getting Darren O'Day back. And you talk about how good Wilson was in his first outing. How about Darren O'Day coming back and striking out the side in his first inning back of work? But they really missed him, didn't they, while he was out?
Yeah, I think that's an understatement. they've done so well, I think, in the bullpen. Forget how big Darren O'Day is to their success. And he showed it, striking out the side in his first outing back. He's been huge. Adding him to a bullpen that's got Brad Rock and Zach Britton, I mean, this is a relief core that, especially now with the starters going a little bit deeper, should really be a weapon for them down the stretch.
So the trade deadline is kind of upon us now, Brittany. It's coming up on Monday, August 1st, and we've seen the Red Sox go out, make multiple moves. The Blue Jays traded for Melvin Upton Jr. on Tuesday. The Orioles still haven't made that big move or that push, and there's things that they need to do. Obviously, they need to add some pitching, whether or not that's more bullpen or like more likely maybe a middle of the rotation type starter. Maybe they can add a bat too. I mean, were they a team that was in it all on Melvin Upton Jr.?
They were. Surprisingly so, they were. I think when you look at it, they can also use an outfielder, especially with Joey Rickard hurt. I think they'd like to have a guy that can add speed, really play well defensively, kind of fill in for what they had with Rickard. But you mentioned it. I mean, ideally they need pitching. And where that comes from, I'm not sure. But they're going to continue to be active and look at things. Speaking of the Padres, Andrew Cashner is another guy they've inquired on. The issue is there's so many teams picking from this same pool. So many teams that need pitching, it's going to be really difficult for the Orioles to pull things off.
Yeah, and it seems like so far it's been kind of a quiet deadline season. And I think part of that is because so many teams need these pitchers that the teams that are selling are able to kind of sit back and let those offers kind of pile up. Obviously, the Cubs made the big move to get Aroldis Chapman and the Blue Jays get Upton Jr. But as far as all the relievers on the market and all those starters that aren't aces right now, I mean, the starters out there, they are what they are. You have the Hellickson's and the Cashner's, Odorizzi. I mean, maybe Chris Sale's available, but I don't think the Orioles have what it would take to get a guy like that. But there's so many pitchers that are in that same level and so many teams that need them that it seems like this thing is going to go into the weekend, and then maybe on Sunday we're going to have a whole bunch of moves. Do you think that's where we're kind of headed?
No, probably down to the wire. You're right.
Yeah.
It seems like teams are going to have to kind of either come down on what they're asking for, or other teams are just going to start throwing prospects at them. And you see it every year. You know, it goes down to the final hour or two, and all of a sudden teams are pulling off trades left and right. You really can't keep up. And I think it's going to happen this year as well. And you know, given that the Orioles are in Toronto over the weekend, I'm sure it will happen at the most inconvenient time while I'm internationally traveling. But no, it should be interesting. I agree. It seems like it's something that's going to come down to the deadline. I'd be surprised if the Orioles made a move before at least Sunday.
Ian, we talked plenty about the trade deadline last week on the podcast, and we're going to do it a little bit again as far as what Dave Dombrowski might do, because obviously this team's already made a lot of moves this season. And one of them was to bring in Drew Pomerantz. Obviously a disappointing first outing that we talked about last week against the Giants, a team that he had faced already a bunch of times this season. Much better on Monday night in a game that the Red Sox eventually let get away a little bit late. But Pomerantz, other than, I guess, really one pitch to Jose Iglesias, he was real good. Six innings, allowed just four hits, a couple of earned runs. How much more encouraging was Monday night's start from Pomerantz?
Yeah, no doubt. That was exactly what they wanted to see from Pomerantz, was he had that really good knuckle curveball that was kind of keeping the Tigers really off balance. And you know, the only thing you didn't like to see is if you're going to lose on a home run, you'd probably rather not, you know, a guy like Jose Iglesias. You could probably live with it if it's Miguel Cabrera or Victor Martinez or one of those other dangerous guys they have in their lineup. That's not the guy you want to beat you. So just a mislocated fastball. I haven't really seen Jose Iglesias hit many balls with that kind of authority. But all in all, a real encouraging outing by Pomerantz. He probably could have gone another outing, inning, but John Farrell wants to keep his workload in check and make sure that he's never pitched. He's working toward a career-high innings pitch, so they just want to be careful to make sure he doesn't go more than six very often.
Yeah, because that is one of the big concerns about Pomerantz, is that innings and as far as the season goes. So good to get him out, although the bullpen wasn't great after him. Joe Kelly back with the team coming out of the bullpen. He gave up a run. Clay Buchholz gave up a run. Not the encouraging signs you want to see from those two guys, who this team would love to get a lift from one of those guys, right? Sometime this season, if those guys could jump in, it would really energize this group.
Yeah, but you know what? With Joe Kelly, I mean, his first pitch was 100 miles an hour.
Right.
And then the crowd kind of oohed and aahed when they saw it on the scoreboard. And then he ends up giving up a triple on a pitch that was 100.5 miles an hour. So he just, if he can improve the location a little bit, I think you could have really something to work with. Joe Kelly working in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, this could be a pretty dangerous guy. So, you know, other than the fact that he gave up a leadoff triple, I thought it was an encouraging outing overall. As far as Buchholz, you know, the results haven't translated yet, but I think he's actually thrown the ball a little bit better the last couple times. I think what they're hoping now is he can pitch this well enough so they can maybe trade him for something here over this next week, because he's just not a great fit on this roster right now. So if maybe you can get something for him, you know, he might be a starting pitcher who could help maybe a contender in the National League.
Now, I wouldn't imagine that they could get much more than organizational depth from him, though, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess in a sense you'd save a little money on him as well.
Yeah, I mean, similar to like when they traded Jake Peavy in 2014, they got Heath Embry, and he's turned into a useful. There we are, two years after that trade, and Embry's turned into at least a useful piece for the Red Sox. He's in Pawtucket right now, but he's had, you know, he helped them win some games this year. So maybe if you could even get somebody like that for Buchholz, you'd be doing pretty well. Last year, Shane Victorino, you offloaded him and got Josh Rutledge, and Josh, did a nice job for the Red Sox this year before he got hurt. So, like you said, organizational depth.
So you talk about guys they could get back in that sense of down the road. But this team is obviously playing in the here and now and are very much buyers all the way in. And when you're a buyer at the deadline and Dave Dombrowski's running the show, anything's possible, Ian. We've seen that over the years. And obviously it's already – we've seen Ziegler, we see Pomerantz, we've seen guys come over. Is there still a big splash out there? Talking to Jim Duquette a little bit this week, and he said – he thought if the Red Sox were going to make another move this week, it's going to be a big one. Is that the way you see it, or could they still make a few small moves as well?
Yeah, no, I could go either way. You know, Dombrowski is in a great position here in that, you know, he's already made some pretty good moves here with Ziegler and with Drew Pomeranz and even with Aaron Hill. So as Dave said yesterday, he doesn't feel a driving force to make a trade here, and I think that he's really telling teams, hey, you're the one who has to make a trade here, not me. I've got a good team. So if you want me to make a trade with you, you better give me a franchise player and maybe, you know, see if we can make a deal here. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if they do make a move. But I think Dombrowski is probably in a great position right now as far as, you know, make a move is there, but not force things. I think a lot of people would feel uneasy if they traded Yoan Moncada. You know, no matter who they got back, unless it was maybe Chris Sale, maybe it's the one guy that you would trade Moncada for who's out there on the trade market.
You just brought me into what my next point was going to be, Ian, and that is you mentioned franchise player. And to me, when you look at this market this year, Sale's kind of the only one of those players out there. I mean, maybe we thought Chris Archer was a franchise player, but you got to doubt that a little bit when you see what he's done this year. Is there a scenario where Yoan Moncada could be included in a trade between now and Monday?
Yeah, you know, I think with that contract Sale has, you know, you got to look at that. Yeah. I mean, this is a franchise pitcher here. And, you know, those don't grow on trees. It would be very difficult to give up a Yoan Moncada, but this might be the one guy you do it for. And I think that the Red Sox could also sweeten that pot and throw Eduardo Rodriguez in that deal because I don't think that you want to have four lefties in your rotation. So at that point, if you can get Sale, you can have Price, Sale, and Pomerantz as your three lefties, and maybe, like I said, throw Eddie Rodriguez in that deal and see if you can make something happen. You know, it would be tough to do if trading Moncada. You don't know how good he's going to be. I mean, this guy could be a superstar, but, you know, Chris Sale already is a superstar. So I think this is going to be fascinating to watch. And, you know, I really don't have a sense of really how compelled the White Sox are to move Sale in the first place. So this will be pretty interesting to see if something actually happens there.
Yeah, and I would think the Red Sox, there's no way they would deal Moncada and Benintendi, but maybe
they wouldn't, yeah.
Right, one
the
or scenario, the other, who knows.
The scenario I laid out, Moncada, maybe a Rodriguez, I think that might make a little more sense.
Yeah, certainly. And the thought of a three-game series where you could come with Chris Sale throwing high 90s in game one, then maybe you come back with Stephen Wright throwing a knuckleball and then go to David Price throwing back in the night. I mean, that would be a tough thing for other teams to handle. And certainly, you mentioned the contract. As far as Sale goes, you'd have him this year, and then you have him locked in next year, and then two club options after that. And all those are team-friendly when you look at the current market. I think the highest year is that last year would be maybe $13.5 million. So absolutely bargain-type deal for a team if they could acquire Chris Sale.